So every chemical has a different toxicity. And so what I mean by that is a chemical toxic at different concentrations? And so that's where the kind of the ranking or the prioritization came in of how we said, well, these ones are the kind of the priority ones. So it's really what we thought. These ones are what we're putting forward as these 16 chemicals as priority chemicals that we feel strongly are likely posing a risk to Chinook salmon, as well as other aquatic biota in the Fraser River. And then we had other ones, 23 other contaminants, where we were like, these are watch list compounds that we want to flag as for future monitoring and that should be assessed. So you're kind of coming back to your question of, well, what can we do? You know, I think one, the awareness, two, for authorities like our chemical regulators, just to be mindful of how can we now turn off the tap of getting these chemicals, you know, finding ways and being creative and innovative of how can we, you know, look for improving even wastewater discharge. You know, are there other innovative ways that can or reducing stormwater runoff and cleaning up that stormwater runoff before it's entering our salmon-bearing streams, as well as agricultural runoff. So I think there's a lot of we have the capacity to improve a lot in that area.
It was interesting, like hearing you speak about the different like priorities given to different contaminants or chemicals, depending on like their severity. I guess are there some where that's sort of not even known yet, what how that could be affecting salmon?
And I think there's, you know, what we don't know is probably much larger than what we do know. So that's another scary aspect about the number of chemicals that are actually in our environment, right? So when we set on this large endeavor to try to find all the kind of we call them thresholds essentially. So studies that have gone out and looked at, does this chemical cause an effect in, say, fish or other aquatic biota? And then you're comparing that to the actual concentrations that you're measuring in either the water or the tissue. What we, you know, there was a rather short list of chemicals that we could actually do that for, if you're thinking in the context of the broader list that we were even able to measure. And so that's why we used a number of different approaches. So it's a great question that you have. And yeah, the short answer is that, you know, we need to catch up on the science in terms of identifying the risk that a lot of these compounds that pose to aquatic biota and humans as well. You always have to put it in the context. So everything we eat has contaminants, right? Because and I think, but there's a lot of other aspects about the food, the quality of our foods, kind of outweigh the exposure to those compounds and to those chemicals. So you have to think about it in kind of a few different lenses, if you will. And so, you know, even when we're thinking about, you know, important food items like salmon, just the nutritional value and quality kind of exceeds a lot of the exposure that, say, that humans would be exposed to. And what we were measuring, we were looking at juvenile Chinook. So most people are obviously eating adult Chinook, so very different chemicals that we would, you know, the levels would look very different in an adult Chinook versus a juvenile Chinook. And so, and even, you know, when I'm looking at it from a toxicologist perspective, you know, my concern will be coming, I'll be at higher concern, say, for pharmaceuticals or current use pesticides and the impacts they might have on juvenile Chinook over, say, in the adult Chinook. We're more concerned about more of those bioaccumulative, and what I mean are contaminants that accumulate in the fat tissue or muscle tissue of an organism over time as they age, but also when you get into a marine food web. As you feed higher in a trophic level, say for like example, our killer whales, they feed very high on they feed high in the trophic level, and so those Marine mammals are exposed to much higher concentrations of these types of contaminants that tend to accumulate more in fat tissue as well as muscle tissue. So, yeah, just thinking about it in that context as well. But I think just coming back to you can always have to, there's the cost and the benefits, right? And so, yeah, just putting that in that perspective. And we can look at, we are, you know, there has been work from past work that are, my group as well as others, just looking at at how contaminated different salmonid species are, or even different populations of Chinook salmon. So there, you can look at it from that perspective as well.
So yeah, it's very multifaceted, a lot of nuance
Yes.
in yeah, measuring the contaminants and toxicity of certain salmonids, as you said.
Come on,
Yeah.
yeah, so yeah, salmon species.
Yes. That, I believe, was all the time that I had for this interview. But if there was anything that we didn't touch on that you would like to mention or speak about, or you think is an important takeaway for this study for people to know about, what would that be?
I think just that, you know, the Fraser is not, you know, is not, it's unique in that, you know, it's one of Canada's, it was once our, the largest salmon-bearing river, but it's not unique in the sense of, and it comes back to kind of your first question, was I surprised to find this these 200 contaminants that we detected, or were we surprised? And I think, you know, anywhere we look, whether we're looking in the Great Lakes or even south of the border in Washington State, this it's not unique in that we would expect to find a lot of these compounds and even more compounds if we had the ability to detect them and measure them in our freshwater water, in our freshwater systems, right? And in our ocean. And so just, I think just being mindful of what we're exposing, of what is in our environment, right? And then putting the pressure on regulators and in terms of how can we turn off the tap on these contaminants.
Once again, that was our conversation with ecotoxicologist Tanya Brown on a recent research study out of SFU that found over 200 contaminants in the Lower Fraser River that are currently affecting juvenile Chinook salmon populations. This has been Danny Nazvetarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This interview would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
Thanks to Danny Nesvetarani for that. Stay tuned. We'll be back with Gardening with Embark in 40 seconds.
Something curious, something cultural, something unserious. Sometimes serious, something mundane, something every day, though not even really that. Tune into Typically Tuesdays, airing every Monday. You heard that right, Monday. From 3 to 4 p.m., your hour of quasi-cerebral talk and tunes.
Time now for Gardening with Embark. And joining me in the studio here is Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability. He joins us every week. Welcome, Pablo.
Thank you. Thank you. Glad to be here and, yeah, to talk a bit more about our gardening experiences.
Yeah. So gardening is it's a fun activity, and it's an activity where you can generate your own food. But there's a lot more to it than just that.
That's right. Gardening is a gateway for other activities besides growing food. As a new gardener, as a beginner, we start with trying to identify and differentiate similar crops.
Yeah.
For instance, trying to see which crop is a cabbage, cauliflower, and broccoli. That's our main work as a beginner, to identify which is one. And the other is we tend to confuse Swiss chard with beets,
yeah,
beetroot. So that once we are over with experience and growing, we start identifying the plants and start to know the plants more common through their features. And later will be a stage as well that what is a wheat and what's our crops. It's very funny when I see in the gardens or beginners growing plantain. Mm-hmm. And when I ask why you're growing plantain, and they say, no, it's not plantain, it's a spinach. Or why you're growing dandelion, it's not dandelion, it's lettuce. Like, all right, so I can see the confusion. Yeah. Until, but there is,
I guess when plants are small and seedlings, it's often very hard to tell them apart.
That's right, yeah. So we are talking when they are just few weeks old, so mm-hmm. it's quite difficult to separate them. After that, so we continue developing our skills. So now we know how to identify crops, how to identify weeds. And then we say, okay, shall we experiment with new crops? That's one venue. Other venue say, well, what about herbs? Mm-hmm. And we have all these oreganos, different types of oreganos, thyme, two types of thyme, and lemon balm, catmint. So all those herbs so there are people that decide to move into that, what we call herb gardening. Mm-hmm. So grow lots of herbs, dry them out, and then you have your herbs. Lavender as well. What we can do with the flowers of lavender. So yep. At the moment, we have all our lavenders with tiny little flowers coming up nicely. And soon we will be harvesting to make lavender syrup. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that here in Bark we love to do, lavender syrup, also sugar lavender, which is blending sugar with lavender flowers. So it's delicious. So that would be one venue that at the end some of our gardeners would decide, okay, yeah, I feel comfortable with that. I want to explore more in that venue. Other venue could be like, oh, I know how to grow food. What about the food forest? Mm-hmm. What about we have a little patch with some trees in there? What about bringing our crops into that area and developing a bit more? And then you start experimenting like, oh, can we grow peas and beans at the bottom of the tree so they grow and climb on the tree and so on. So, yeah. That will be a food forest. And as well, most of the time we'll say we used to get medicine from our plants, from our wild plants. And so you go to the medicine side, mm-hmm. Growing wild medicines and wild foods. So we are comfortable keep growing our own food, but we now try to expand our knowledge a bit more so that we have wild edibles going to hunt for mushrooms, trying to eat more herbs and wild plants and adding to our diet. So gardening, somehow you started to grow your strawberries, your broccoli, your kale, and now you are eating chickweed, minus lettuce. Then you get tea from made from on the willow because it's good for a headache, for instance. Right. And then you have your bouquet of Garnier, which is a combination of herbs for your salads, for your and like myself, I start to learning, oh, I can dry oregano, thyme, and every time I make popcorn, I sprinkle rather than with salt, a bit of oil, and then you put your herbs, and then you have a herbal popcorn. Like, so we start experiment. And of course, together with that, it goes all the mental health as well, mm-hmm. because we know we have with herbs lots of essence aromas in there, so you start as well aromatherapy, which is very common, very particularly so. Yeah. And then if you are upset, nothing works in the day, go to the garden, start weeding.
Yeah, it's just a great activity to sort of step apart from the rest of the world for a bit and focus on your plants, and the gardens and that mm-hmm. sort of natural processes.
Yes. So, yeah. So gardening, as I say, is a gateway for all other activities that we have out there. And they're becoming now quite common, quite unique. At the moment, we have all these mushrooms. We have a lot of shaggy manes coming out. Mm-hmm. And so, and then the wild edibles there in the garden, like dandelions, and dandelions in the spring, we have lots of flowers of dandelions, so we can harvest them, use the petals for baking, for making some syrup. So there is and lots of books as well coming out nowadays, with written by indigenous people about how to use wild plants for medicine and for food.
Yeah. I think also one thing I've noticed often when people take up gardening is it really sort of challenges their home cooking too, because often, I mean, you've talked before about, you know, the 4x4 boxes you have and how much you can actually produce.
Correct.
In even a garden, 16 square foot garden. And of course, people get a whole bunch of this and that and the other thing. And of course, they didn't want to eat the same thing every day. So, okay, well, another salad today, you know, right? So they're, you know, or well, we're just going to do the same thing with these squash and stuff. You know,
they, yes.
It's yeah. like they have a whole bunch of produce. Now they have to figure out a bunch of different ways to prepare it so that they can use their produce without making it boring and eating the same thing.
Yes, how to prepare or how to preserve, how to make this last long, so you don't have to eat everything at the same time.
Right.
So we are exploring dry freezing now. It is very popular, or vacuum sealing as well.
Yeah.
So you can vacuum seal and you can put it in the refrigerator and it stays for a long time, still be able to eat. So a few weeks ago, I had lots of leeks. So what we did, we just chopped in little pieces, blanched, and packed it in Ziploc bags and stay in the fridge. But it has a time limit that you can keep that. So now we are exploring the way with a vacuum sealer.
Mm-hmm.
So still the same process, but rather have a Ziploc with still air in there, we just vacuum seal, and that's it. So we can extend the life cycle, life of that produce. So, yeah, it's again going back to the homesteading, homesteading, making this produce that we harvested and extended long time.
Yeah.
So we don't have to eat every day the same.
And I think for many gardeners too, just the whole idea of, you know, creating your own food and going through all the steps from growing it through to using it in your meals to preserving it and keeping it for longer, you know, it's a real sort of self-reliance process.
Yes.
But also, again, a way of sort of, you know, stepping out of the usual sort of commercial buy this, buy that.
Yep.
You know,
So we become self-reliable.
Mm-hmm.
We can grow our own food. So yeah, so we don't depend on the market.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that we know what grows in the produce. We know how we grow. There is no pesticide. It's more nutritious. We don't have to worry about that. So yeah, the taste is different. And once you have your produce, in, let's say you are going to use at the end of fall, like, okay, so what I can do with this?
Yeah.
And that's what we call eating with the seasons.
Mm-hmm.
We're eating with the seasons, so the produce will be consumed according to the seasons, and that's very much what we try to do now. Thanks to globalization, produce travel all around the world, and we can have cucumbers and watermelon over the winter, no problem, pineapples over the winter. But we don't have any squashes or cabbages during that time, or if you find it, it's very expensive.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, growing your own food is a great way to reduce your carbon footprint.
Correct, yes. And do your personal contribution to the climate, yeah.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much, Pablo. You'll be back next week. Tell us about Embark's programs and what it's about.
Yeah, so Embark is a nonprofit organization that is based in here and in the Studio Union building in Burnaby campus. We have two main streams of interest, which is climate equity and food justice. You might have seen lately we are running the food rescue program every Thursday between 2 and 3 o'clock in the afternoon in the Sayway Hall. Yep. So we distribute produce. For instance, today we harvest quite a bit from our garden, and that fresh produce is being distributed. So we are happy to share with the SFU community. So you will see us there. Also, you can visit us through our website at embarksustainability.org or through our social media channels at embarksustainability.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Pablo Vimes. We'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week.
And Gardening with Embark with Pablo will be back next week at about 10:35 next Monday morning. So please tune in for that. If you have, if you are intrigued by anything you hear here on CJSF, on any of our programs, and this one included, we'd love to hear your thoughts. You can give us a call or send us a text message to our studio line at 778-782-2573. That's 782-CJSF. We would love to hear your thoughts or your comments about stories we play. You can also tell us about stories you'd love us to cover, or just send a compliment or a some nice feedback. We'd love to hear from you. That's 778-782-2573. We're going to play some music here for you. This is from an artist, Hard Body Dreams, featuring, featuring Guilty Black and Kotli. This is from, they're also otherwise known, Hard Body Dreams is also known as the host of our Wednesday night hip hop show, One Order 6 o'clock Blast. Which is on at 6 o'clock, as you might expect, on Wednesday evenings. A great show featuring lots of great hip-hop plus interviews and features with local artists. They recently had some DJs up to play live in the studio, so all great stuff. You can tune in for that. But apart from that, also an independent performing artist, and we're going to listen to this track from Hard Body.
Shining on us like drip water. Pretty women round with them big four. devil won't invest in me. She licking on my ears and she thinks she got the best of me. Money buys power, power always got respect for me. That's why I'm hiding money over bitches to the death of me. But Lucy with the fur always seems to take my breath from me. All black everything, yeah. I think we got the recipe. Diamonds in the rough, my niggas shine under pressure. Be more money, more rhymes, but never fear the energy. 48 laws to every man, needs some enemies. Just look into my eyes and feel the vibe is so heavenly. She all over my woody cause I said she got a friend in me. Always stay fly, see the drip drip heavily. The grind is the grind, both physically and mentally. Sun still shines and in the west where succumbs to sleep. Cause in these streets ain't nothing sweet. Time is money, talk is cheap. Action speak, plan discreet, control and delete, breach.
Don't supply you a safe around, no. We just tryna make it out. The streets don't supply you a safe around, no. We just tryna make it out. The streets don't supply you a safe around, no. We just tryna make it out. The streets don't supply you a safe around.
Thank y'all for coming out this evening. See, we just tryna give you that knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. It's been glorious. I mean, you know we remain victorious. And may our names remain notorious. Peace to the seven. I was on the block with the poltergeist. It was cold as ice. While the fiends be smoking pipes at the same time holding knives. You wanna gamble with your life? Come and roll the dice. I'm from a block where they selling twats for a bowl of ice. When it comes to spitting, I be holding mics. Know some brothers that be pimping like they Dolomite. I was in prison, couldn't wait to unfold the kites. Rappers talking loose, nowadays they know that my flow is tight. We stand tall, y'all be at Frodo's height. I heard the drugs, nowadays a Super Bowl price. We was broke, couldn't even get a bowl of rice. I done seen them become kingpins overnight. Dreams.
All right, Hard Body Dreams. Track called Triumph, featuring Guilty Black and Cat Hill. That's from a new album on our playlist, which is called, I squirreled away from it. So now I can't remember what it's called. Anyway, great tune. You can also tune into their live radio show every Wednesday at 6 p.m. right here on CJSF. Denny Nesvadarani's here, and he's going to tell us what he's got in store for tomorrow's Speak Up coming up 10 o'clock Tuesday morning.
Yes. Hello. My name is Denny Nesvadarani. I host tomorrow's Speak Up right at 10 a.m. And tomorrow what I have planned is a recap and exploration of an exhibition that I attended yesterday on Sunday at Main Island, an island I'd never been to. But the exhibiting artist Chris Paul is a Coast Salish Wasanich artist whose exhibition titled Rebuilding Connections was sort of meant to be a way of reintroducing and building community in Main Island, showing the history of the Wasanich people, of his heritage. So it was really cool being able to speak with him as well as some of the curatorial people and just the community. I'd never been, but Main Island is very community oriented.
You really liked it?
I really enjoyed it, yeah.
The Gulf Islands are kind of special. They're, you know, it's so close, but feels really different than the mainland here.
Very much so. And like the, you know, obviously, like, I think one thing I've noticed with the Gulf Islands is the population tends to skew older.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was so incredibly kind and warm and friendly the entire time. And it was just, yeah, it was a really lovely trip, really amazing artwork. So if you know you have the chance to go see it, you'll learn more about it tomorrow at 10 a.m. But yeah, it's just one ferry ride down.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Danny. Tune in tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. to catch all that and more on Speak Up. Lots more great programming coming up here on CJSF. We have Wandering Rhythms coming up in just 1 hour at 12 o'clock. Typically Tuesdays is up at 3. Wire and Nerve, metal and loud music up at 6 p.m. And lots more great programming here on CJSF. Remember, if you want to comment on anything you hear on the station here, you can give us you can give us a call, but you can also send us a text at 778-782-2573. That's 782-CJSF. We'd love to hear from you. All right, Democracy Now! Is coming up. See you, Daniel. See you tomorrow. And thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.